The Red Sox break their losing streak, taking Game 1 of their series against the Braves 5-1. The Sox improve their record on the season to 28 wins, 31 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Jim Dolfino and Jeremy Schilling, and we are the Bastards of Boston. And if you want more, you can go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for written articles and an ever-growing product. So, where do we start with this one? It's nice to get a win, finally, after so many days of heartbreak. Giolito pulled after 85 pitches. Maybe we can start with a familiar story there and discussing these starting pitchers who are not capable of giving us deep games, aside from Crochet.
Yeah, I'll start off. Pretty good appearance by Giolito overall. 4 2/3 innings pitched, 5 hits, 1 earned run, couple walks in there, had a few strikeouts. The biggest thing is the 85 pitches over 4 2/3. Coors seems to be having a hook right around that 80 to 85 pitch mark of late. My concern for that, as probably you guys as well, it's not sustainable. You can't just have your starters going 5 or less innings 6 days a week and expect to get great output by your bullpen. Additionally, that's going to wear thin. I did put a tweet out tonight that this was game 58 and Brennan Bernardino has now appeared in 26 of those 58 games, which is kind of a astronomical amount of appearances. But, he got the out he needed, luckily enough. But the reality is that that is not going to be a sustainable product when you're going to be June 1st on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, with Crochet, when he came out after 85 pitches, it was more about the future, long-term contract. I think Cora actually came out and said, we're trying to protect him. I think some lip reading went on, and he said something to that when he got to the mound. Giolito is a short-term solution. So maybe it's a lack of trust, sort of thing. Either way, he's just putting so much pressure and stress on the bullpen just from a pure number of innings perspective. This is not sustainable. You need to get 5, 6, somebody needs to go 7 innings every fifth day to just give the bullpen a spell. Hendricks is IL. He wasn't necessarily effective anyways. That's a whole different story, but there's just so much stress out there. There's so many innings. You mentioned the 26 appearances in 58 games, guys. Bernardino's going to break down either by health or by performance, but it's going to happen at this rate. This is ridiculous. So, I would have liked to see him try to get through at least 5. If he's at 92 pitches, see if he can go and get a couple quick outs in the 6th. Obviously, matchups matter, but the nerds at Fenway don't want to see starting pitchers not named Garrett Crochet face a lineup for the 3rd time. And it's obviously been mixed with mixed results, I should say, because it's just shaky. And but for Toro's great play, although I think Jim thinks it was called incorrectly on replay, who knows where this game goes?
No doubt about it. Giolito, he was pulled right before facing Matt Olson for the 3rd time. And I guess if you're going to be intimidated by any batter in the opposing lineup, that's a good one. But for me, it comes down to a war of attrition. You might be able to win the battles along the way, but the war at the end of the season is a different story. And when you have guys like Sean Newcomb or guys who can come out and just eat innings, it's one thing. It's another thing when you're having pitchers who I have faith in come October, if we do get to that point in the season. I want guys like Weissert, like Whitlock, like Slayton, like Chapman, like Bernardino being able to actually throw their best stuff. And if you have these guys breaking down come July, August, September, how many times have we seen it in the postseason, time and time again, league-wide, even last year from guys like Class A? You get to the postseason and it seems like you're just gassed. that's the worst thing that can happen to a team, is having their high-end talent, specifically when it comes to the bullpen, just because that seems to be the group of guys most likely to get burnt out. If you just grind them into dust, I mean, you're really screwing yourself long-term, and it's scary. I know that there was a lot of hard contact tonight from Giolito. I know that, you know, potentially he was a bit lucky to have kept it a one-run game, but it really does concern me with the fact that we're sort of managing this team with no faith that we're going to be able to win in close games. That, oh, if Giolito gives up one or two more runs here, that's it. That's the nail in our coffin. But I also get where, you know, we're coming from managing in that sort of mindset, because that's what we've been seeing so far from the Sox.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mindset from Corin, I don't want to guess because I would be wrong a lot this year, but you're looking at Buehler, Crochet, Saturday, Sunday, and the best laid plan is they each go at least six. One of them goes seven or more. So that might be the thought process with Giolito tonight. I also think, you know, Cora maybe placed a little bit more importance on tonight's game and the streak, get a win out of the break. You know, it's just, there's no guarantees with this team. So, you know, as an example, Buehler gets run in the third inning last week, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Crochet start. He's been great all year, but, you know, it's just, everything is just, you can't set an expectation as a fan, because the opposite tends to happen with this team.
Yeah, and, you know, kind of switching gears a little bit to the defense, as it relates to the Story Toro play, to your point, Jeremy, I did kind of do a little bit of a breakdown of that, and I put it in the war room, and I looked at the three-second mark and the four-second mark. The ball was not in Toro's glove at three, and then on four, his foot was off the bag, so... To be the normal heel that I am, you know.
You can't help yourself, Jim. That's all right.
I can't help myself. I really can't. You know, I believe it wasn't conclusive enough to turn that decision. But let's forget about that for a minute. The horrific throw home by Toro, and I understand you're rushing the throw, but you can't throw it away like you did. I mean, it was just like it was like the Three Stooges. I put two tweets on Twitter today, one from the first inning when they gaffed it, and then again after that inning too. So regardless of the fact that he was out or not, you know, you're still throwing the ball around like the Bad News Bears.
And that's really been something we've been seeing from the Sox for a long time now. How many years have we just seen sloppy base running and sloppy defensive plays? Routine stuff that just gets airmailed into the stands. We've seen that a lot, and we've seen it from Devers. We've seen it from Hamilton. We've seen it from Story. We've seen it from Casas. No matter who we roll out, it seems like they will catch the boneheaded play like it's a disease. You know, it's contagious. It spreads from guy to guy. And it's frustrating to watch, because at the end of the day, you go back to Earl Weaver's philosophy, which I love to subscribe to. He says, how do you win games? It's through pitching, fundamentals, and the three-run home run. And we're not hitting a lot of home runs this year. The pitching has been shaky. And if you don't have fundamentals, what do you have?
There's been a couple other plays, at least in tonight's game, that might have been overlooked. So if you actually follow that play, which again was overturned, Toro bounces the ball to Narvarez. Narvarez then makes an ill-conceived throw to third with the guy already on the bag. Why are you risking that throw? Now, as it were, the throw was right at Mayer. He caught it, no issue, but he had no shot of throwing him out. And I'm already hands in the air, what's going on? And he's making another throw. Like, guy, back pocket that thing and let's move on. Now, as it were, we get lucky with the overturned call. Jim disagrees, but, you know, it's all washed away. Another play is... ball hit by Verdugo to Campbell at second. He goes to transfer the ball. The ball pops out of his glove, and he like redirects his hand and catches it, flips it to Story, and gets the out. But like, that could have been another disaster. It also, and we'll never know, but that could have prevented the double play. So it's seemingly like, even if you're not looking fine enough, there's still other plays where it's just not smooth. The decision making's not great. In Campbell's case, a routine transfer of the ball from the glove to the hand is bobbled. It's just a bleep show, guys. It's an absolute bleep show.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, and to your point, Navarez has made a couple other plays like that that I questioned as well. I don't remember what series it is. If you guys do, let me know. There was a runner on third, and he tried to throw the ball because he was coming down the line a little bit. And the first thing out of my head was like, you're going to throw the ball away and the winning run is going to score. It could have been in that Milwaukee series, but I can't quite remember. So there's been a few bonehead defensive moves on Navarez's part. Again, he's a rookie, but you do have Jason Varitek there, who's supposed to be the catching guru. I mean, you should be working with him a little bit harder so that you don't make those kind of mistakes.
Look, mistakes happen. It's repeated mistakes that concern me, right? Exactly. Jim, I'm aware of what you do professionally. Mistakes happen. It's the people in business and professional sports and any walk of life that make the same mistake over and over again that you have to have a problem with. One thing I did like about Navarez tonight was the double to right center, though.
Oh, yeah. His bat's been wonderful. It really has. The fact that he's been able to make such consistently good contact. You know, he's not the most disciplined guy up there. He strikes out a fair amount. He'll chase pitches. He'll whiff. But, I mean, when the barrel percentage is that good, it's hard to deny. Good things happen. And because of that, he's been able to find the gap quite a bit. And, you know, I don't have a spray chart up in front of me, but it sort of feels like he's not necessarily been a one-trick pony these days. You know, he really is finding different areas of the field to attack. You know, speaking of guys that I want to give a shout out to, what about that wonderful defensive play from Meyer? Absolutely brilliant. Just steals a line drive. I forget who hit it, but he just makes this leaping grab. And that's the value, I think, of having a great defender on the field. I saw that, I believe the metric is defensive runs saved. We're currently leading in right field and center field and at catcher. And we're top 10 in left field. It's great to see, but obviously second base and shortstop has been a bit of a disaster for us. To actually get Meyer's defense on the field, even if it is at third base, I feel like it's making an impact, even when he does have a quiet night at the plate like he did tonight.
I'd like to see a bigger sample size, obviously. I know that's kind of a cop-out, but young player, mistakes are going to be made, but he does show the ability. You know, if you have the arm to play short, you probably have the arm to play third. You just have to catch the ball hit right at you. You know, you don't have to rely so much on the range. So if he's steady with balls at him and he provides kind of an anchor there at third base, you know, it helps. First base has also not been good. You know, when Cassis was playing, that was a spot, man. And, you know, we have essentially two non-first basemen playing first. So if you have a third baseman that can be consistent, especially because your up the middle infield defense just isn't going to be until they make a decision there, which I think it's only a matter of time until Mayer's playing shortstop and then maybe you resolve that issue. But for example, the Story throw, he makes a difficult play to catch the ball. He spins, he has the time to balance and set himself, and then he inexplicably makes a little league throw there. Like, it's one thing if you get to a ball you didn't think you're going to get to, and then you have really no time and you're doing like the Jeter jump throw. That's not what happened. He had time, the ball was absolutely smoked at him, and he had plenty of time to set his feet, and he still botched the throw. You know, and you know, I'm no Trevor Story apologist for sure, but like, I'm just getting tired of it. And even during the earlier portions of tonight's game, every time he fielded a ball, I kind of hold my breath knowing there's something that could come up here.
Well, I think the other part of it is that he might be aware of the fact that he doesn't have the arm he used to have. So he could be rushing that kind of a throw, and that plays a role into it. I mean, it's really clear that he's not the defensive guy he once was. And this is another reason why I think a guy like Mayer should be at his natural position in short. I've mentioned it many times that I have concerns with moving guys around. This team has done this numerous times over the last 20, 25 years. And in most instances, it doesn't work out for a lot of those players. And when you're doing that as a rookie, it's not going to make things better. It's only going to make things harder for them, in my opinion. You know, again, Campbell's played second. He's played center. He's played left. He's already been told that he's going to play at least one game at first. You know, he's got to be thinking of that too. And that's going to affect you offensively and defensively for whatever position you're playing that day. You know, Mayer's playing third base now. He's been a shortstop. He played a couple games at second base in AAA. So he's been bounced around a little bit. And then you look at him from the offensive standpoint. He's bat fourth, now fifth. So, I mean, you're putting a little too much expectations on these two kids. And I'm worried that it's going to happen in round three with Roman Anthony. One of the things the Red Sox were really good at during, I would say, between 2002, 2003, all the way up till, you know, 2020, let's call it, when they got a rookie and brought them up to the major leagues, they had a sustainability of having most of those players bat ninth, right? And the idea behind that is to really not put a lot of pressure on them and try to acclimate to the major leagues. And unfortunately, this team is so inept on a night-to-night basis that they don't have that ability to try to get them to acclimate to the major leagues in a slow, sustainable way. So I think you're going to wind up putting too much pressure on these three kids. And I hope it doesn't backfire, because let's face it, this entire organization has been running on these three guys for the last four years, and give or take with Anthony or Campbell. But you get my point. If they don't work out, it's going to be curtains for this team, because where do you go from there? Who's the next guy on the list? You know, Johaxson, you know, Garcia, or they call him the password. He's looked good, but again, it's minor league pitching. But let's not keep doing this over and over and over again and ruining even more guys. So I pray to God that this isn't going to happen and they can overcome and, you know, sustain that. But, you know, revisionist history has shown that it can backfire.
Yeah. Prospects will hit, prospects will miss. That's the nature of the game. More often than not, they'll miss. These three guys have been hyped up to such a degree that you're right. We've been relying on them. You know, it was the big three with Anthony, Meyer, and Teal. And then it became the big four with Campbell, and then Teal got traded. And now it's the big three once more. And we are really counting on these guys because, like you say, who is after them? Yastinson isn't going to be ready for at least another year, you would have to imagine. He's doing very well in AAA, but he just got there. Arias, I think, is down in either high A or double A right now. Again, doing very well, but shouldn't be here for another year or two. And I think that a lot of the problems that we have discussed and been discussing, whether it's, you know, offensive struggles from Campbell and Meyer, whether it's defensive struggles from guys like Story or guys like Narvaez or anyone, I think that when you have a team where the expectations were sky high, like they were this year, especially for the Boston Red Sox, where the organization, you sort of expect every year the expectations are sky high, right? I think that when you have a losing team that is failing to live up to their expectations, you get too many individual players who are trying to put the team on their back, and they end up trying to do too much. And because of that, they are going for excellent plays, not just good plays, excellent plays, because they feel they have to. Otherwise, the team's going to lose. And so you get these guys making throws that they probably should pocket. You get these guys swinging for the fences when a single would probably be just as good. And it really is kind of a culture problem that's been brewing in Boston for the past few years, and we need to turn it around. Even tonight, as nice as, you know, some of those rallies were, the seventh inning, incredibly painful, incredibly familiar, back-to-back singles, no outs, two men on. One out afterwards, I think Duran popped up or flew out. Devers walks the bases loaded. We weren't able to actually score any of those runs. Thankfully, we were able to score when we loaded the bases again in the ninth. But overall, on the night, 2 for 12 with runners in scoring position. It's more of the same.
100%. The bullpen bailed him out tonight. It's we already talked about the starting pitching. It's not a formula for winning games at the big league level, not on a consistent basis. And this team needs to start playing with some consistency. I mean, they've put themselves behind the eight ball. If they're not going to rip off a long winning streak, they've got to start winning series. And the consistency has to be in every area of the game. It has to improve in every area of the game. Pitching, hitting, situational hitting, base running, defense. Like, I could go on and on. This team is subpar to maybe average across the board. And then you have a team that's already like that. And to Jim's point, you add in two rookies, prospects, and you slot them in the middle of the lineup. I mean, and I understand Bregman's hurt. I don't want to hear about Cassis's injuries, hitting 186 when he went down with a 500-something OPS. Don't come at me with Cassis got hurt. We already needed a fix there. So, you know, it's a problem. You know, I remember when Bogaerts came up, he was playing out of position. He hit in the bottom of the lineup. As the roster aged out, he went back to his natural position and assumed hitting in the middle of the lineup. But prospects are still prospects until they play and show over at least half a season who they're going to be. So you're relying on guys with essentially no track record, and you're being forced to put them in a position in the lineup to have at bats that win and lose the game. It's too much. You know, and I hate it for the players, because they don't realize it now. They're trying to make a name for themselves. And what competitor is going to say, hey, Skip, don't bat me fourth tonight, my rookie season, fourth game of the year, whatever I played in, sixth, seventh game? No one. Then you don't have a competitor. And you already know the prospect isn't going to be what you want him to be. So they, of course, take on the role, but it's not fair to them. You're supposed to protect the players. You're protecting Devers. You don't want him to grab a glove, but you don't want to protect the rookies. You don't want to protect the bullpen. You want to run them out there and have them pitch over five innings a game. I don't know. We talked a lot about Cora the last time I was on with Jim, so I don't want to get into it again and rehash it. But, you know, there's just – and I know – guys, here's the crazy part. We won tonight. Dory hit the longest home run by a Red Sox in 2025 today. You know, it just – the problem is the bullpen bailed him out. And all the issues were either covered up by the overturn call, or, you know, for other reasons it didn't hurt us, but they're still present. So for those that are listening, and those fans that think this is the start of, you know, the next, you know, here we go, we're going to start to turn the wheel a little bit. Guys, go watch the game. All the same issues are present. We just happen to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, look, a broken clock can be right twice a day. So switching gears for just a couple minutes before we kind of give an outlook for the rest of the weekend. Abraham Toro is now batting .294, three home runs, five RBIs, and an .843 OPS. In May, he's got 12 hits, seven strikeouts. He's scored six runs. He's had three doubles, three home runs, four RBIs in May. Legit, or is this luck?
I have been pretty vocal about my dislike of Toro on the roster for some time. And this past week, you know, I've been happy to be a Toro hater because I'm getting proven wrong, you know, so that's beautiful. It does concern me. Just in this sample size now, you're looking at 50 or 51 plate appearances right now without a walk. That really is one of those big red flags for me. I mean, guys like Rafaela can make it work, but even he's not making it work, really. You've got to be a special kind of player to refuse to walk like Salvador Perez would actually be a great example of that. That dude hates walking, and yet he's able to hit the ball so consistently and so hard that, you know, he makes up for it, even in Kauffman. Toro, I don't know. The chase isn't good. I know it's iffy to look at, like, advanced metrics in a smaller sample size, but you sort of look at where he was last year, not a good season by any measure. He's sort of in line with what he did last year. And so I am willing to say good work. I'm happy for you. Keep it up. But I cannot expect this dude to be an 800 OPS player for much longer, you know?
Beggars can't be choosers. And right now he's a hot bat, and he is a large reason, obviously, why we won tonight. But here's how I look at it. He is 100%, you're not going to get any reasonable person to disagree. He is not the long-term solution at first base. So while he's hitting, while, you know, he's doing what he's doing, you got to put him in the lineup and let him hit. But once he goes cold, you know, what do we do? Do we go to Sogard? Have you, at by that point, convinced Devers to play first base? If we're in it in August and September, I would be absolutely shocked if Toro is still getting regular at-bats at first base.
So we got Buehler tomorrow against Schwellenbach, and then Crochet against Elder on Sunday. What are your projections for both of those games? Nick, you first.
I'm feeling pretty good about the Crochet-Elder matchup. Elder has not pitched very, very well. 4.5 ERA right now on the season. I'm a little more concerned about Schwellenbach. I've got a lot of faith in Buehler. I think that he's been pitching better as the season's been going on. Schwellenbach, he's no slouch either. He's very stingy when it comes to the walks. He doesn't like to give them out. Same with home runs. I think he's about average in terms of home runs, if not a little above average in terms of home runs allowed. He's not striking guys out, which is good, especially for our team, because we love to strike out. So maybe just in there, we can sort of patchwork together a win, but I would be really shocked if we sweep this. I think if I had to guess, we're going to lose a close one tomorrow and win a close one the next day.
Jeremy.
Loss. I didn't know if you listened the other night, but I went into this, so I'm going to be briefer than I was the other day. I have, and I've been on this podcast on and off for like four seasons. I have always gone to the matchup for the forecast of what I believe is going to happen. That has almost no value with this team because you don't know what dumb things they're going to do to affect the ball game. So while on paper, you obviously love Crochet, I think they're going to find a way to lose the game. They haven't hit for him all year. Okay, this isn't emotional. It's really not. I know you think it's emotional. It's not emotional. This is based on the eye test. Crochet will pitch well, and he will likely leave the game up a run or it tied. It'll have to be, you know, 1-0 or 0-0, because while he is going to have a quality start, we're not going to hit. And they'll find a way to just blow it, you know, whether it be, again, inability to hit in extra innings or whatever it is. And I just, and I know they won tonight, right? And I should be positive, but they're still doing the stupid things consistently. It's going to be pervasive throughout the balance of this series and into next week. And until there's a major shakeup, either with the roster, you know, the dugout management, whatever they deem to be the best thing to light the torch here, they haven't shown the ability to stop doing the dumb things. It's going to continue in the series. The Braves will win the series 2-1. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you do, Jeremy. I'm really shocked that they won today. I figured I called a sweep to begin with before the series started. And surprisingly, they pulled this one off. I think they tried to lose it, to be honest with you, but it just didn't go their way. To Nick's point, Buehler has looked a little bit better. It looks like there's been an uptick in his velocity since he's come off the IL. So, from a positive standpoint, I like that. I just don't see in a head-to-head matchup that he can match up with Schwellenbach. As far as Crochet is concerned, you know, again, they're paying him to be a guy that's going to have an ERA of 2. They're paying him to be a guy that can win 15 ball games in his sleep. So they need him to go out and throw a shutout. And unfortunately, if that doesn't happen, there's a very good likelihood that he's going to lose. And the numbers support that. You don't have an ERA of close to 2 and be 6-6 in games started by your ace. It just doesn't happen. So I'm looking at 2 losses for the next 2 nights. I think the Atlanta bats are going to wake up a little bit more. And if, especially if they can pull a few off of Buehler, I think they can then take that into this third game of the series. Don't forget, they were playing late, I think, last night, so they could have been a little bit tired coming in, which would, you know, they'll get a good night's sleep tonight, and I think their bats are going to wake up tomorrow.
Well, you know, and one last thing I want to add, actually, about Crochet is, obviously, we were all very upset in that early yank against the Mets. And Cora's big reason for that was that the previous 2 weeks, or the previous 2 starts, rather, Crochet had gone over 100 pitches each start, and so they wanted him to be on a bit of a hook. And I remember coming on here after Crochet's last start saying, why did we push him to 108 pitches? Are we going to get into a situation his next start where we want him to go deep? And Cora's going to say again, oh, well, you know, he just pitched 108 last time, you know? And so I guess that is very possible this time. Maybe now that we are looking like we're going to need our pitchers to go deep, we need someone to. And maybe Cora will say, oh, well, we got to keep him fresh 90 pitches. You never really know, unfortunately. I do know that despite the nice things tonight, Story, like you said, hitting a no-doubter home run, Campbell showing signs of life over the past week. I think he actually has an on-base a little over 300 in the last 7 games. So he's starting to at least not be a black hole. And Toro having a 3-hit game. 14 strikeouts. And like I mentioned before, 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. You've just got to do better overall as a product. Fielding, running, hitting, pitching, everything. If the Red Sox want to keep their wild card hopes alive, which it's hard to say they're alive right now, 2 games behind Toronto in third place, right? You really just need a more complete product on the field.
One of the things that I always use as a barometer, especially for watching baseball the last 40 years or so, back before we had all these wild cards and so forth, I always looked at the fact that the Red Sox had to win 15 games a month. When you win 15 games a month, you win 90 for the season. Simple math. So right now you're at 28 games. You've had April and May. I know there's a layover a little bit in March, but work with me for a minute. By having 30 wins, 15 a month is what you need to do. July is always a little tougher because you have the All-Star break. But herein lies the actual numbers. At 28-31, that leaves 103 ball games left. To win 90 games, I got to go 62-41 over the balance of this schedule. And you have absolutely no faith that they could do that. I don't have any faith that they could do that because they haven't had a sustainable win-loss record up until now that would support that they could do that, especially now with Bregman out. So I don't know, 62-41 is a big reach.
I'd say no chance.
No, I'm not seeing it. I'm really not. We are fortunate that we are in the American League right now. In the National League, we would already be, you know, encouraging the office to just, you know, just sell off Chapman, sell off all these pieces, because over there, I mean, this record would be so far from acceptable, so far from competitive. We're lucky that the Rays, the Blue Jays, these are teams that can flame out. You know, the Twins, these are teams that can flame out. But we're also a team that can flame out, as we've been showing this entire season long, by flaming out. So I just, with us pushing the relievers as hard as we've been, with our rotation falling apart, Bayo, Hauk, you know, just being awful. And like you said, with Bregman going out, I just, we do not have elite baseball in front of us. I just can't see that happening with this current roster. So that's all for tonight. Unless you gentlemen have any closing thoughts, tomorrow the game will kick off at 4:10 p.m. We'll see what Buehler can do versus Schwellenbach. Both the Red Sox and the Braves hoping to turn their seasons around, really. 28-31 for Boston, 26-30 for Atlanta. Both teams kind of comparable in a lot of ways. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Remember to check us out at bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for written articles and much, much more to come. And we will see you next time. Have a great night.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.